Claude Mori Varadi, Arasala Vesic Slita. Claude Avi Mori, Vini Marasi Yifu, Claude Rasha Yayeshiva, Guest of Honor, Musmakan, Family, Friends. Dr. Miller pointed out that it was about 30 years ago, just 30 years ago, that I was sitting there as a participant in the Chag HaSmicha. Since then, I have participated in three Chag HaSmichas as president. But there is something especially memorable about this Chag HaSmicha. Two things. First, it is not only a landmark in your lives as individuals, the lives of your family and friends, but this is the last Chag HaSmicha in the first century of our yeshiva's existence. Because the next Chag HaSmicha will be the first one of the second century of yeshiva's existence. The second reason for a special sentimental significance of this event Claude Mori Varadi Haras Dalavesik Shlita Mori Varadi Haras Vishish Shlita Claude Avi Mori Vini Marasi Yifil Claude Rasha Yayeshiva Guest of Honor Musmakan Family Friends. Dr. Miller pointed out that it was about 30 years ago, just 30 years ago, that I was sitting there as a participant in the Chag HaSmicha. Since then, I have participated in three Chag HaSmichas as president. But there is something especially memorable about this Chag HaSmicha. Two things. First, it is not only a landmark in your lives as individuals, the lives of your family and friends, but this is the last Chag HaSmicha in the first century of our yeshiva's existence. Because the next Chag HaSmicha will be the first one of the second century of yeshiva's existence. The second reason for a special sentimental significance of this event is that in some ways this class is a first. It is the first class to graduate from the Smicha program under its new name. A few days ago, I had the pleasure to announce that as a result of a benefaction of a Boston philanthropist, Maurice Saval, the Smicha program will be renamed in honor of the 40th anniversary of the Rav Shlita as Rosh Yeshiva and will be known as the Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik Center of Rabbinic Studies or the Beis Ufana LaTorah V'Ahorah Al-Shem HaGoyen of Yosef Doyer Soloveitchik Shlita. May you be with us, guide us, teach us, and let us enjoy the benefits of your creativity as Mayor of the Eshvim Shalom. Someone once said that education is what a man has left after he has forgotten all that he has learned. Applying this insight to a Ben Torah, to a Torah scholar, we might ask, what distinguishes a Ben Torah from other people, from other professionals, from other scholars? after you subtract all that he has learned of Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, of the Shonim and Achronim, of Rambams and Leibids and Ambans and Balamors, of Rav Chaim's, Rav Kiva Eger's, and Shachan and Tazim. What is left? Remove all that. And Manish Tano. In what way is a graduate of this yeshiva different? What makes or should make him different? In other words, what are the attitudinal foundations that inform the mentality of a Ben Torah, and that our yeshiva, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, tries to provide for its students and its graduates? Most obviously, the primary attitude that we seek to imbue our students with is Ahavas HaTorah, the love of Torah. Not only the knowledge of Torah. Knowledge is factual, but the love of Torah, the esteem for the study of Torah. If he forgot all that he learned, the first task of a Ben Torah would be to relearn it all. Because learning, studying, growing in creativity in Torah, it is first imperative. Kehem chayenu va'orech yameinu, because the Torah is our life, it's the length of our days. It defines the essence of what we are. Inscribed in the cornerstone of this yeshiva, metaphorically, is a principle that the Chaim of Volozhin cemented 180 years ago into the foundation of his yeshiva, Yeshiva Seitz Chaim, the mother of all yeshivos since. And that is that the principle of the Mishnah, the Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, that the study of Torah outweighs all other commandments, is not quantitative, but functional. Not only is Torah more than the sum of the commandments, but it is their very source. The Torah is the Eitz Chaim, the tree of life, and everything else are the branches of that tree, so that the study of Torah is the source of all Jewish life. Hence, as B'nai Torah, and I am speaking, of course, to our graduates, our musmachim, but through them to myself and to everyone else, your overarching commitment is to learn and to continue your intellectual growth in Torah. The day you stop is the day you no longer are a Ben Torah, heaven forbid, and on that day your class, your diploma is meaningless gibberish, and the signatories regret having signed it. I have always wondered, there seems to be an asymmetry, an imbalance in our prayer book, in our Sefer HaTfilot. Morning and night, we make two blessings. At night, before we go to sleep, we say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, we bless God, HaMapil Chavlei Sheina Al Einai Usnuma Al Afafai. We bless God who closes my eyes in sleep and my eyelids in slumber. And appropriately, in the morning, one of the blessings is, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, HaMa'avir Sheina Me'einai Usnuma Me Afafai. We bless God who removes sleep from my eyes and slumber from my eyelids. So far, so good. But the accompanying petitions of the Hiroto and the Brocha Smucha Lachavata do not seem to be analogous. At night, it is reasonable. We bless God who puts me to sleep, and we say, Hiroto Mulfanacham, may it be thy will, O God, Shetashki Veini L'Shalom, V'Sami Deini L'Shalom, let me go to sleep in peace. Not addressed to us now, friends. May I put me to sleep with peace. May I arise in peace. May I not be disturbed by bad dreams, by evil thoughts, by disturbing thoughts. Fine. One would therefore expect that the morning blessing would be parallel. May you give me a day of peace and no arguments and no battles. A day in which I can make my parnasa and have luxury and a sense of ease. That would be normal. Instead, we have another petition, another prayer. We say, V'hirasa milfanecha, shetargileini b'sorasecha v'dapkeinu b'mitzvaysecha. We beg God to habituate us to Torah. May we become habituated to Torah and cleave to the commandments. Why this asymmetry, this difference? The answer is simple. Because a true Ben Torah must understand and know that without Torah, why, you don't even know that you're awake. The element of wakefulness, the state of wakefulness, is not only a pure psychological, a physiological faith. It is a spiritual faith. And without this daily contact with the eternal, without this creativity, then we are surrounded and overwhelmed by the humdrum routine of daily existence. And what difference does it make if we are sleeping or not sleeping? A Rav who does not practice Vesargileni Besorasacha is not only fashlochen, but he is not authentic. His mind and his heart and the eyes of his mind and his heart are asleep. So Ahavat Torah is an absolute prerequisite in the mentality of a Ben Torah. And we expect it of you, my friend. We not only expect it of you, now that you're out, we can't demand, but to the extent that we can demand, we demand it of you. It is so obvious a foundation of the mentality and the attitude of a graduate of yeshiva that it does not require any further elaboration by me. And therefore, I shall concentrate on the second element. If the first element is Ahavat HaTorah, and so self-understood, the second element is Ahavat Yisrael, the love of your fellow Jews. And what a greater need is there for Ahavat Yisrael than in this year and these months of disunity, divisiveness, and sometimes almost civil war amongst our people. Because Torah was not meant to be exclusively a source of your own spiritual growth, religious integrity, and intellectual creativity. Torah is the Sama Dechaya, the Gemara says. It is a medicine, a life-giving elixir. And a medicine that is kept on the shelf and never dispensed is not a medicine, it's merely a chemical. And sometimes can be dangerous. The problem with too many of us in the world of B'nai Torah and Yeshivas, including our own, is that we suffer from a kind of spiritual narcissism. Shalom Alecha Nafshi, a spiritual introversion. We are concerned only with our Shmiras and Mitzvahs, with how much Gemara we're going to learn and how many times we are going to master, with a resultant indifference and sometimes antipathy to Jews who are unlike me, who do not share my perceptions, my ambitions, who are different, who are deficient in learning or commitment or observance. The result is that even those who do devote their lives to Harbatas HaTorah, to rabbinate or education, often confine themselves to preaching to the converted, see themselves as halachic technicians with little sense of responsibility for the lives of others, physical as well as intellectual, worldly as well as spiritual, psychological as well as scholarly. I recently talked to a young man. I shall not divulge the name of the institution where he studies. It might be here, it might be elsewhere. A young man, a fine Talmid Chacham. And I said to him, tell me, what do you plan to do after you leave the yeshiva? I was pleased when he told me he intended to go into Avodas HaKodesh, the communal work. He said, I would like to become the rabbi of a shul in an Orthodox neighborhood, and I'm going to give only Sheyurim, not drashas. Only lectures, only Sheyurim. I'm not going to give drashas, where sermons, of course, we wouldn't mention. Now, while I was pleased with this Ahavat HaTorah, very pleased, I was also worried about the lack of Ahavat Yisrael. I must confess that I was also taken aback by the pretentiousness of the remark. For Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yudah HaNotzi to give drashas was all right. The Ramban and the Ran gave drashas. Our own Rabbi Rav gave outstanding drashas and gives them. Even Moshe Rabbeinu Dorosh Dorosh Moshe. But for a young Talmid Chacham, well, he's too great and too important and too scholarly to reach out and communicate with hoi polloi with ordinary people. I'm sure the young man didn't intend that, but what he said was symbolic of a mentality that has to be confronted and analyzed and, if necessary, negated. Torah is meant for all Jews, not just for a small circle of those who are privileged to study in the yeshiva. It was meant for balabatim as well as rabbanim, for the not yet observant as well as those already observant. It means that we who have had the privilege of studying, we were permitted to study only because of the Joe Drusses and so many others sitting here and elsewhere. Of a community
of the great community organization that allowed us to study, and we have a debt to that community. And we dare not be ungrateful in Puyetova. And we must use every form of communication, the halachic shir and the drosha and personal contact, in order to bring Torah to Am Yisrael, because that's what Ahavat Yisrael is all about. Maybe that's why right after we say Shetagileinu b'sarasecha v'dabkeinu b'mitzvasecha, we ask God to habituate us to Torah. We ask Him also v'yenu lo lidei chet v'lo lidei aveira v'lo lidei avon, not to lead us into sin. Because sometimes when we are in Torah, we have the aveira of the chet, we miss the mark, and we overlook our responsibilities to others who must also benefit from Torah. But I don't want to be unkind. I recognize a psychological reality, and I ask you to forgive me for mentioning this, but obviously I think it's important enough to reserve for a Chag HaSmicha. I recognize a psychological reality. After spending years in the yeshiva, and no matter how much education we give you in the university at the same time, we're a rather closed circle. You have a deep immersion in Torah scholarship, so much deeper than others have, that after a while you feel uncomfortable with those who have not attained that level, who may even look down upon it, who have never tasted of the holiness, the beauty, the loveliness of Torah and its significance. If that's the way you feel, let me make a confession to you. I'm also uncomfortable with many Jews, many types of Jews. Any rabbi, any educator, any leader of a great organization, and we have many here, any president of the yeshiva, has to deal with a variety of people whose views he may not approve of, whose lifestyle he does not wish to share, whose company he may not enjoy, or he simply may not like. You know, I can give you a whole list of people with whom I don't feel particularly relaxed. Jews who are embarrassed with their Jewishness, Jews who are either intolerant of or enamored of non-Jews, Kanoim who burn Israeli flags, Israelis who think that a state substitutes for Torah, Jewish op-ed writers of the New York Times who excoriate Israel in the name of we Jews, Israelis who regret not being born American wasps, Jews who are in fact indistinguishable from wasps. The list goes on and on and on. I'm uncomfortable with them. Many kinds of people. But, and this is my point, so what if I'm not comfortable with them? Ahavat Yisrael means that even if I don't approve of them, even if I don't endorse their views, even if I don't relish their company, even if I don't like them, I must love them. And I must dedicate my life to saving and enhancing and enriching their lives, to healing them and comforting them, to bringing them to Torah and Torah to them. Because if we Jews do not have each other, we have no one. That's Ahavat Yisrael. It's not an easy mitzvah. And it is even more incumbent upon Jewish leaders and Rabbanim and B'nai Torah than upon other Jews. This duty of Jewish leaders, B'nai Torah towards fellow Jews, was already adumbrated for us by Moshe Rabbeinu. Because I believe, rather shockingly, that Moshe didn't really like his Jews. By that I mean, I don't think that Moses found them congenial. He was not comfortable with them. He didn't enjoy their presence, didn't have much respect for them, no desire to impress them, did not seek their approval, a little mutuality between them. The truth to tell, Moshe was not the sort of man whom it was easy to get along with or make him like you. It's difficult to develop an easy relationship with a perfectionist, let alone the greatest prophet who ever lived. It is equally true that Moshe found little to like about those Israelites, the Bnei Yisrael, an impetuous and whining and complaining lot. Look what happened. Moses broke open for them the horizons of heaven, and they concentrated on their trivial needs and petty wants. He offered for them a career of Kedusha, holiness, transcending and transforming. And they sniveled, and I'll give you the menu that they had. They wanted leeks and onions and garlic and cucumbers. That was their response. He offered freedom, chorus, chedus, and they complained that they were thirsty. He pointed to the heights of the spirit, And they complained about the seared habosa, the flesh pots of Egypt. All they wanted was a fleshig meal. They were ungrateful, stubborn, slow to learn, and narrow. But Moshe was passionate in his love of Israel. He loved Israel more than anyone who ever lived. He was the only human being in all of history to whom God made the offer that for him, he would abandon all the rest of the people, let them disappear, and rebuild Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the Jewish people, through him alone, through Moshe alone. What an offer! He would be the first of the forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses. And yet, he not only turned it down, but he said, if you're not going to listen to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then am I in Mecheni no Mitzvecha, erase me from the book of life. He loved Jews so much he was willing to forfeit for them his life, his faith, his destiny, his eternity. And Moshe loved them enough to risk and sacrifice all for them, although he didn't like them very much. As a result, he was impatient with them, usually intolerant, angry, and upset. So Moshe Rabbeinu teaches all Jews, especially Jewish leaders imbued with Torah, that ahava transcends liking. That as the Ramban interprets the mitzvah of Yahata L'Reyacha Kamocha, that shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, it is not an emotional commandment. It is a functional commandment. You can't love my neighbors. Some of them are not terribly lovable. Your neighbors may not be lovable. How can you love them? The answer is it means act lovingly to them. Do things, even if emotionally you do not find yourself in sympathy with them. How did a Moshe... Well, I'm going to skip out of it. It's later than I thought, and I invite all of you back 3 years hence in 1986 to hear the rest of this. I think you're trying to tell us something. This is the kiyum of Mitzvah Ahavas Yisrael as taught to us by Moshe Rabbeinu the Adon HaNeviim. He was the ultimate archetype of the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Talmud Chacham, the Ben Torah. And his difficulties, his challenges, yes, his ambivalencies and his resolutions are all a model for Torah leadership in the personal and social problems that confront us. And this, my dear Moslachim, this is the Ahavas Yisrael which will inspire you to devote your lives, whether vocationally or avocationally, to Avodas HaKodesh, to risk problems, to risk distaste, to risk peacelessness of mind, to travel far and wide, to seek out our people wherever they are, to minister to them, to make their lives happier, richer, and to bring them the message of Torah. These twin loves, Ahavas HaTorah and Ahavas Yisrael, are what a true Rav, a true Ben Torah, has left, even after you subtract all his lumdus, all his scholarship. They are the basic attitudes that orient and motivate him. Your Rosh HaYeshiva has found you worthy of the Keter HaRabonus, the crown of the rabbinate. This means a trust and a confidence in your learning and in your love of learning and love of your fellow Jews. I have no doubt that that trust and that confidence will be vindicated as you go forth, each in his own way, to be a Marbit Torah and a Meirim Karno Shel Yisrael, and in the process bring much Nachas Ruach to your families, your Rebbeim, and your Yeshiva. And on your behalf, I am sure all of us here, conclude that Yehi Rotzon with which I began. Usneinu Hayom Uvachol Yom L'chein u'l'chesed u'l'rachamim b'yeinecha u'v'eineicha u'roeinu v'sigmaleinu chasadim tovim baruch ato Hashem domeo chasadim tovim v'yamo Yisrael.
Thank you very much, President Lamb. There's an additional brief but important presentation item not listed in your program, for which I would like to introduce Mr. Josh Isaac, the president of the Student Organization of Yeshiva.
Kavod Rav Shlita, Rabbi Lamb, Rosh Yeshiva, Mismachim, Talmidim, and distinguished guests. The Rambam teaches us in Hilchot Sefer Torah, Mitzvot Asei Akol Ish V'Ish Mishael, Lichtov Sefer Torah La'atzmo, Shenemar, Batek Batak Kidbulachem Et Hashira. It is a positive commandment for each and every person to write for himself a Sefer Torah. The Halacha teaches us that a person can fulfill this mitzvah by acquiring a Sefer Torah. Over a year ago, a project of writing of the Sefer Torah was begun in this yeshiva. The sofer work in the library, where hundreds of rebbeim, students, and visitors from all over were able to observe and experience the writing of this Torah, a unique experience. In all education, there is a dual experience. In learning, we learn from svarim, and we learn from observing. This dual experience was seen in the writing of the Sefer Torah. We learned the halachas, and we were able to observe the writing. The Rebbe-Talmud relationship is also similar in this dual experience. We learn from the study of Torah, and additionally, we learn from observing our Rosh Yeshiva fulfill the words of the Torah. We learn from this experience. The time and devotion of the Rebbeim spent with their Talmidim far exceed the time of their just giving up Shia. It gives me great joy and pleasure in making the following presentation. On behalf of the Board of Yeshiva, I want to present this Torah, which is written in the Yeshiva, in honor of the Rosh Yeshiva, upon their dedication and devotion to the Yeshiva.
Get out now.
I accept with great gratitude the gift that was given to us and the symbolism behind it. The Torah itself is described in Mishlei, the book of Proverbs, as Eitz Chayim Hi L'Machazikim Ba V'Samcheha Me'ushar, a tree of life for those who take hold of it, and those who support it will be happy. It is therefore an exceedingly great pleasure to announce, as already been announced, an innovation that has not been done in years past. A special award to an outstanding supporter of Torah, the award to be known as the Eitz Chaim Award. Eitz Chaim, the tree of life, is not only a euphemism for Torah, it is also the name of a yeshiva, which close to a century ago in the Lower East Side was absorbed into Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan, our yeshiva. So at the very beginning, we were known as Eitz Chaim. The first such Eitz Chaim award goes to a man so eminently qualified for it that anything that I can say will be inadequate and superfluous. And yet, a man who has consistently and constantly turned me down, refused to accept any honors from Yeshiva University or Yeshivas of Yisrael Elkanan heretofore. Mr. Groot, Mrs. Groot, I want you to know something. You don't need this award. You have been honored, revered, sought after, pursued by people and institutions all over the world. Your name is a household name. So I would like you to know that the award we are giving you today is not so much for your sake, it is for our sake. More specifically, it is for the sake of the young men who are sitting behind you, our mismachim. They know from intimate experience what Gedolei HaTorah look like. Giants in Torah. They are here, behind me. They have studied under them, worked under them, been trained by them. We ask you to be part of this Chag HaSmicha because we, Mr. and Mrs. Gross, we want them, our students, always to remember the experience of meeting a Gadol Hador in the realm of Tzedakah, a giant of the generation in philanthropy. We believe that it is not enough for them to be exposed to giants of Torah. They must also encounter the giants who support Jewish education and Torah in all forms and ways. Indeed, as the Rav has often said, Mr. Joseph Gross is a revolutionary far ahead of his time, a visionary in support of Jewish education. His personal, he deserves it. His personal generosity to all institutions of Jewish learning is legendary. To us, he and his dear wife Carolyn have showed a deep and sympathetic understanding of the needs of the yeshiva, where out of our 7,000 students, some 4,000 study Torah every day, gratis. No tuition is paid for the study of Torah. And they have showed this in a number of ways. By establishing the Caroline and Joseph S. Gross Institute in Yerushalayim, I'd like you to know, Mr. and Mrs. Gross, that 25 of these students have spent at least a year or two in your institute in Yerushalayim. In the 70s, this couple established the Gross Reese faculty salary supplements. A few years ago, they renovated the Beis Medrash in the hall right next to us. This year they established a Gross Reese Faculty Endowment Fund, and the crowning achievement, the Caroline and Joseph S. Gross Postgraduate Torah. The rabbis tell us that Gadol HaMa'aseh Yoser Min HaOseh. One who causes others to do a good thing is even greater than one who does it himself. Well, with the Grosses, we have people who are neither one nor the other alone. They are both Oseh and Ma'aseh. Joe Gross is not only magnanimous and Oseh, he is an incredible Ma'aseh. He has used his own munificence as a splendid and noble lever to educate our communal, great communal organizations to rise to new heights in responding to the needs of Jewish education. And for this, we are eternally grateful to you. I have one word, one adjective to apply to this family. I would use the word Malchus. In Yiddish, it comes out better. There's Malchus. Malchus means there's greatness, dignity, royalty, sovereignty, even more than the Hebrew Malchus, but there is a sense of presence. How did Malchus' kingship begin in Israel? There are really two beginnings, you know. Technically, the first king in Israel was Joseph. He was Sheni LaMelech. Second only to Pharaoh, he effectively ruled the entire empire. On the other hand, the first king technically, or in a different way technically, is Shaul, Saul. Both answers are correct, and yet each by itself is incomplete, because each of these, Joseph and Saul, had what the other lacked. Joseph had undisputed greatness, an effective political, economic, financial, social genius who had social and political control of the empire. But while he was generous to his own people, the major gift of his talent went to the outside world, to the Goyim. Saul was altogether for his own people, but he lacked the scope and the broader horizons, the dimension of greatness that Joseph had. In addition, he didn't have a good self-image, which Joseph most certainly did. Only later in the person of King David were both united. Each of them, therefore, the Joseph Malchus and the Shaul Malchus, represents another aspect of royalty. And the name of our guest of honor is Yosef Shaul Gruss. Two mouthfuls, the combination of both. As Mr. Gruss comes forward to accept this Eighth Chaim Award, I will read the text of the award and then make two special presentations of which he is unaware before we proceed. Please, Mr. Gruss.
This is Lola.
Allow me to read this. A Chayim Hil and Machazikim Ba, it is a tree of life to them who grasp it. Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan acknowledges the induction of Yosef Shaul Gruss, Joseph S. Gruss, as the first member of the Tree of Life Society. In grateful recognition of his dedication to the dissemination of the teaching of Torah, the Tree of Life of the Jewish people, and his historic munificence to institutions of Torah learning throughout the world, his efforts on behalf of Jewish education will enrich the Jewish community for generations to come, conferred at the Chag HaSmicha Chof Aleph Adar Tavshin Mem Gimel March 6, signed by Mr. Charles Bentheim, Chairman of the Board, and myself as President. Now, Mr. Gruss, two things. What is that? Mr. Gruss is Yosef Shaul. The first time I met him, I said that name strikes a bell. And indeed, he was named by his parents, Yosef Shaul, in honor of one of the greatest Gedolim of all times, the renowned author of Shalat Tshuva Shaul Ameshiv, Rabbi Yosef Shaul Nathanson. We therefore, Mr. Gruss, will give you, for as a symbolic gift to your library, this set of the Shaul Ameshiv with the following inscription. Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan takes pride in presenting to its distinguished patron and benefactor, Mr. Joseph S. Gruss, to the Yosef Shaul Shlita, these volumes by the immortal sage and scholar after whom he was named, Rabbi Yosef Shaul Zatzal, Rabbi Joseph Saul Nathanson, Rabbi of Lvov Lemberg, on the occasion of Mr. Gruss's initiation as the first member of the Tree of Life Society at the Chag HaSmicha, mit Eifrichtiger Anerkennung und tiefer Dankbarkeit, signed by myself on this day. Finally, we ask you, Mr. Gruss, to be a messenger for us, to deliver a little memento of our esteem to Mrs. Gruss. It is a gold key inscribed with the name of Caroline Gruss and the logo of Yeshiva University. Mrs. Gruss, in many ways, you have been a key to Mr. Gruss, and the two of you have been a key to the survival and the prevailing of Torah and Jewish education. We give this to you with our great gratitude and esteem.
You can give this down. Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, Rabbi Ram, honored guests, it gives me great pleasure to address you today, especially to the newly obtained rabbis who are now ready to take their place as leaders and educators of the new generation. 40 years ago, we were witness to the dry bones of a Yehu prophecy, scattered in despair all over the world. Today, 40 years later, we observe these bones covered with flesh and blood, rebuilding a new Jewish life. We had this wish to see the creation of Medinas Yisroel and the State of Israel. We see it in the city of New Square, flourishing the Jewish life, building a Torah's emes. Badly, we see it in comparison of Yeshiva Torah's emes, as I first saw it with the building of Torah's emes, Joseph Bruce High School of today. The dry bones of the Yehu have come to life in a yeshiva in Paris, in a Beit Midrash in the mystic city of Smart in Israel, a building of the Lubavitch Yeshiva on Ocean Parkway, and the vision of the Yehu has reached the height that this establishment and this yeshiva of a calling for brilliant minds. All of this and many others are evidence of a new life streaming out of the dry bones. Mrs. Bruce and myself are privileged and happy that we could participate in all these endeavors. But the greatest guarantee for continuity of our Jewish survival are you, our ordained rabbis, who will bring into the Tomic congregation the light which has the vision of the prophet as Yehu. Thank you.
I have the concluding announcements, and then we will draw our program to a conclusion. Immediately after the Hatikva, the guests are invited, after the processional, to cross the street to the Science Hall Commons, that's on Amsterdam Avenue and 184th Street, for a reception for the Mesmachim. The Mesmachim are asked to go to the Beis HaMedrash, where there will be a class picture together with the Rav and Dr. Lam and also with Mr. Groves. The trustees, and I'm pleased to welcome them all, those who have come, the chairman, Mr. Herbert Tenzer. The trustees are invited to go to the Beis HaMedrash for writing of a letter in the Sefer Torah. This too is the tradition of our people, and those who would like to participate in it, we ask the trustees please to do so first, and then the Mesmachim will also have an opportunity. I would also like to extend an invitation to all present to visit the Yeshiva University Museum before leaving the campus. This morning there was the opening of a new exhibition of stained glass ceremonial objects and ornamental panels. If indeed you can't go today, we invite you back on another day. But since you are here, this would be a good day indeed for you to visit our museum. I would like to extend thanks to the committee whose names are listed, to all of you for having come, to the marshals, to Rabbi Yavrik, who has served as coordinator. And now I'm going to call again on Mr. Edward Fox, who is the registrar.